rescuers continue the search for survivors after powerful earthquakes in Syria and Turkey. And in Iran, large protests have subsided, but there are quieter forms of dissent.
Even though the protests now have largely tapered off, they have already brought change in Iran. A lot of women, thousands of women now, walk the streets every day without a headscarf on. That was unthinkable only a year ago.
Plus, what to watch for in President Biden's State of the Union address tonight. It's Tuesday, February 7th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The death toll from two earthquakes in Turkey and Syria has risen to more than 7,000 as rescuers continue to dig through the rubble. Officials fear that number will continue to rise, and Turkey's president has declared a three-month state of emergency. Our Middle East correspondent Jared Mousin is covering this story. He sent this report from the city of Bilin in southern Turkey near the Syrian border earlier today.
Rescue workers are using construction equipment to try to retrieve the body of a 38-year-old woman and a 5-year-old child. They've been working for the last 2 hours to try to retrieve this mother and child. There's no electricity here. There's no light. It's freezing cold. Some of the rescue workers and people from this neighborhood are huddled around a fire where they're actually burning pieces of the houses, shutters, and so on, other debris from the collapsed buildings for warmth. We hear the constant sound of sirens in the background. The broader picture is this is the second day of a national rescue effort where rescue teams have been completely overwhelmed all over the country and in Syria. And the scale of the destruction here is really only now coming to light. In the days ahead, we're going to find out the true scale of the horror that's taken place here.
And we have full coverage of this developing story on our website, WSJ.com. Turning now to the U.S., Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell said today the labor market's surprising strength could mean the fight against inflation is far from over. During an interview at the Economic Club in Washington, Powell remarked on Friday's jobs report.
We didn't expect it to be this strong, but I would say it kind of shows you why we think that this will be a process that takes a significant period of time. The labor market's extraordinarily strong.
The report showed the economy entered the new year by adding an unusually large number of jobs. Powell indicated the Fed is prepared to raise interest rates even higher if the data suggests the economy is unexpectedly accelerating. President Biden will lay out his accomplishments and hopes for the next 2 years at tonight's State of the Union address. Our D.C. reporter Daniela Cheslow has more.
Biden will address a joint session of Congress, his first State of the Union since Republicans won control of the House in last year's midterms. He's going to make the case that his policies are doing well for the country's economy. He's likely going to reiterate U.S. support for Ukraine, and the ambassador of Ukraine will be a guest for tonight's speech for the second year. And Biden's expected to urge lawmakers to pass a policing bill that would make it easier to prosecute police officers for misconduct. Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders will give the GOP response. Republicans told reporters today they plan to attack Biden over a surge in migrants crossing the southern border and on his reaction to a suspected Chinese surveillance balloon that drifted over the U.S. last week. The two parties are also gearing up for a showdown over raising the debt ceiling. You can watch the speech starting at 9 p.m. Eastern and follow our live coverage on our website. I'm Daniela Cheslow for The Wall Street Journal.
A new report says China's land-based nuclear weapons capacity is growing. We report exclusively the U.S. military told Congress a few weeks ago that China now has more land-based intercontinental range missile launchers, both mobile and fixed, than the U.S. But federal officials and outside experts say many of China's land-based launchers are currently empty, and the U.S. still holds an edge with many more intercontinental range missiles on land than China and more nuclear warheads mounted on them. Shares of Bed Bath & Beyond fell nearly 50% today after the home goods retailer announced a deal that would allow it to avoid bankruptcy, but that weakened existing shareholders. As we told you this morning, the company has secured more than $1 billion in investor capital, but it'll still move forward with reducing staff and shutting down hundreds of stores. The company expects sales to plummet 30-40% in its first fiscal quarter, but it's optimistic that inventory will recover in time for back-to-college shopping season starting in late summer. And you're probably used to hearing reminders to file your taxes right about now. But this year, the Internal Revenue Service is asking millions of Americans to wait until it can offer guidance on whether several state refund and rebate payments issued last year count as taxable income. In California, for example, more than 16 million special middle-class tax refund payments were issued to help offset inflation and high gas prices. Two of the biggest tax preparation companies, H&R Block and Intuit, say the income isn't taxable. The IRS says it'll clear up the confusion sometime this week. Coming up, last fall, demonstrators held huge anti-government protests in Iran. After a deadly crackdown, those have quieted, but there are still signs of rebellion. More after the break.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
Last year, massive protests erupted in Iran following the death in police custody of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini, who was arrested for allegedly violating Iran's strict Islamic dress code. Protesters called for greater changes, including overthrow of the clerical leadership. But the government responded with deadly force, arresting thousands of people and sentencing more than a dozen to death. Human rights groups estimate that more than 500 protesters were killed. Now, dissent is still there, but it occurs more quietly. Joining me now with more on this is Wall Street Journal foreign correspondent Suna Rasmussen. Hi, Suna. Thanks so much for being here.
Hi, Marie. Thanks for having me.
So, Suna, let's talk about how these protests have changed in the course of just a few months, from large organized demonstrations to, as you're right now, quieter acts of rebellion. How and why are Iranians continuing to demonstrate?
So these protests broke out in September, and for several months there were sporadic weekly protests in Tehran and also in other cities around the country. And these were protests driven primarily by young Iranians, a lot of women among them, because the hijab or the headscarf was sort of the center of these protests. A lot of them were centered around universities or high schools. But as the protests sort of dragged on and they were met with a lethal crackdown by authorities, they have gradually subsided, and we don't see this physical manifestation of discontent in the streets to the same extent anymore. There's rarely big protests in Tehran, and when there are protests, they are scattered around the city and more disorganized. But even though the protests now have largely tapered off, they have already brought change in Iran. A lot of women, thousands of women now, walk the streets every day without a headscarf on. That was unthinkable only a year ago. So something has changed, but this physical manifestation in the form of mass protests, they have abated.
What are the risks here for Iranians who continue to protest? We saw a government crackdown, of course, on those broader demonstrations.
Yeah, and the authorities have also arrested Iranians after demonstrations. They've used electronic surveillance to catch Iranians. For example, they've taken data from ride-hailing apps similar to Uber. It's called Snap in Iran. And then they've tracked down protesters afterwards. And if they are arrested, as you mentioned, over a dozen people have been sentenced to death, but over 1,000 have been indicted, and many, many people have received very harsh and lengthy jail sentences. So there is a risk of young people, including women, being sentenced to lengthy prison sentences, 10 years in prison for being a threat to national security, for example. That is something we've seen And I think that is a real risk that faces these activists in the future, as well as a way for authorities to kind of intimidate them off the streets.
At the same time, these huge demonstrations that we saw late last year were a big challenge to the government. What does it mean for the movement now and for the possibility of changing things in Iran?
What's different about these protests is the demands that have driven this protest movement. There have been large protests in the past in Iran, but they've been sort of centered around single issues. They've been against alleged election fraud or against the government's economic policies. These protests have demanded from the beginning the ouster of the clerical regime in Iran and the toppling of the Islamic Republic. And the Islamic headscarf, the hijab, is a fundamental ideological pillar of the Islamic Republic. These protests have also seen a young generation of increasingly secular Iranians go through a political awakening. The generation, the vanguard of the 1979 Islamic Revolution that's still in power, is aging, and it's faced with this young generation that's increasingly secular and consists of a lot of Iranians who want something different. We know from polling in Iran that support for the Islamic Republic is decreasing quite significantly. This is a challenge that's not going away for the Islamic Republic. And the leadership in Tehran will have to contend with this challenge in the months and years to come. Whether they do that by making concessions or by cracking down even harder and instating an even more repressive regime in Tehran, time will tell. But so far, we haven't seen a lot of willingness from the leadership to make any kind of concessions.
What could continued dissent within Iran mean more broadly, as Western governments have sanctioned the country and we see these protests getting a lot of attention outside of Iran? How are experts viewing this, and what might it mean for the country?
I think it's important to note that the foreign support for the protests in Iran has been quite limited, as far as we know. There's been some sort of technological support. We know there's about 100 Starlink satellites inside Iran that have been smuggled in. The U.S. government has tried to make it easier for Iranians to circumvent internet restrictions. But beyond that, the support has mostly been symbolic and in form of sanctions on Iranian officials and of declarations of support. I think the kind of support is welcomed among protesters in Iran because they can see that their cause is being listened to outside the country. But it doesn't do a whole lot necessarily to strengthen their struggle on the ground. This is largely, I think, a struggle that Iranians will have to undertake themselves.
Wall Street Journal foreign correspondent Suna Rasmussen joining me from London. Thank you, Suna.
My pleasure.
And finally, we've all been told that the secret to workplace success is making yourself indispensable. You know, being the only person who knows how to do the job. But what if that's not true? Leadership expert Liz Wiseman tells our As We Work podcast that people who work under those conditions actually tend to burn out because everything depends on them. Instead, she advises becoming invaluable, the person who steps up when needed and helps others do their jobs better. One way she says you can do that is by knowing your company's agenda.
You need to pay attention to what does your boss and your boss and your boss's boss spend time on? What are topics that come up regularly in staff meetings? What do people talk about on the agenda of meetings that's not actually on the agenda of meetings? What gets funded? What gets mentioned on earnings calls and in company-wide communication? What do people obsess about? That is the agenda.
If you want to get more tips on becoming invaluable at work, check out our work-life podcast, As We Work, wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what's news for this Tuesday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal.